You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. If you feel the pressure to make the most of your time, to constantly get things done, to be productive when you can, our next guest says you may be missing out on something really important, the value of doing nothing.
In a recent piece in The Guardian, our guest says that we and our brains need some time off and that taking time for doing nothing has a lot of benefits, ultimately could help us get more done. Oliver Berkman is with us now. He's a columnist at The Guardian and the author of The Antidote: Happiness for People Who Can't Stand Positive Thinking. His piece, Five Reasons We Should All Learn to Do Nothing, is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Oliver, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks very much for asking me.
So what kind of things, before we get to the benefits, what kind of things count as doing nothing in your mind?
Well, that's an interesting question, isn't it? Because I think it's impossible while you're still alive to be literally doing nothing at all. I think that we're talking about here a whole lot of different things that feel like they're not productive, that feel like they're not very active. It could be, you know, meditation, but it could be much more relaxing, you know, just vegging out, taking a walk, whatever. It's things that we've seemed to have stopped valuing because they don't feel productive. I don't think that they are literally, doing nothing, but that's what they feel like.
Most of us feel good because we're crossing stuff off our to-do list, or getting stuff done, taking care of business. So why should we trade all that doing for nothing? What do we get out of it?
I mean, it's a really good question, and I'm someone who struggles with this myself, right? I'm not some sort of Zen master sitting on a mountaintop who's figured it out. I am the king of sort of adding items to my to-do list that I've already just done, solely so I can cross them out and feel good about myself. But I think that it's really easy to get into a situation where, I mean, I think the essence of the problem is that we come to value future time far more than present time. So the only real useful way to spend an hour, we tell ourselves, is to get things done for the benefit of some future hour, so that it's all done by the end of the day, or so we can go on vacation in 5 months' time, or so we can get to our deathbeds and say, you know, we did all this stuff. And the systematic effect of that is to sort of instrumentalize time. It means you're never in the moment, you're never valuing an hour for what it is, but always for some future hour, which, you know, never arrives, because when you get there, the future is still in the future.
Well, let's get into some of the benefits. How can doing nothing boost our creativity?
There's been quite a lot of research at this point into this idea of the incubation effect. You know, that actually, when you are up against a creative block, when you're not seeing your way forward with a problem at work or a story that you're writing or whatever it might be, that actually stepping away from it, getting a different kind of perspective on it, letting parts of your mind that you're in less control of get to work on it can be really powerful. I think everyone knows that on some level, in the sense of, you know, the idea of sleeping on a problem or getting your best ideas in the shower when you weren't focusing on having ideas. But I think we very easily lose it because we confuse being busy with being useful and productive. We think that, you know, a day well spent is a day that leaves us exhausted, when actually spending an hour walking around the park, if you can get away with it in your job, I know not everyone can, could actually be far more useful for the challenges you're facing at your job. And, you know, apart from that, we're just cyclical. You know, we operate as biological organisms that need downtime as well as uptime. So you treat yourself like a machine. You're going to run yourself down and be no use to anybody.
In terms of how our brains handle all of this activity, Is there a level at which it's too much? We've hit peak brain and we really just need to dial it back so that we can actually do things well again.
I mean, it's a really interesting question. There's so much neuroscience in this field and psychological work. I don't think that the overall conclusion of that is that we have some kind of limit to our capacities. I don't think it's that there's some sort of fixed point. I think it's just that we try to approach everything using the same kind of attention. You know, we tell ourselves that we need to be very, very focused on whatever we're doing at every moment. We interrupt ourselves constantly to try to give that intense focus to a new thing and a new thing and a new thing. And it's just a question of treating this kind of, fleshy tissue between your ears that is, after all, just another organ and another part of the natural world, like you would You know, if you needed sort of farm animals to get things done, you wouldn't work them into the ground. You know, it's just like, it's just a question of being more sort of cyclical and rhythmic.
I can definitely relate to this. I've had moments just on this job where I'll sit and stare at a computer screen. All right, what's the first question to ask on this interview or something like that? And I could sit and stare for a long time and never come up with an answer. And then I'll walk literally, you know, what is around here, a couple hundred feet. And then as I'm walking, the answer comes to me. As I'm wasting, I'll throw quotes around that time. Do you have similar things as a writer? You've written a book. You write a lot of columns. Does that work for you too?
I mean, it does, but I keep forgetting it, and I keep forgetting it. So I sort of get up from my desk in frustration, thinking, oh, I'll never find a way to begin this article or to finish this chapter. And of course, it's the act of getting up that and sort of getting a new perspective on things that makes a difference. One thing I find is whenever I have the opportunity to travel, you know, either because I'm suspended in an airplane and it seems like I'm not really in my real life, or because I'm in a foreign country, so I'm looking at my day-to-day life from a distance. You know, I find that kind of perspective is incredibly powerful. And I think you're getting a little burst of that when you stop, walk away from your desk and you know, contemplate the trees or whatever.
Do you have any other techniques, tips that we can use to sort of step away for a while and do nothing, at least for a little bit in our day?
I mean, one of the things that really, really strikes me looking at the research is how tiny an amount of an engagement with nature is beneficial. You know, it's very easy to think that because we benefit so much from spending a week in the mountains, that like, that's what you got to do. And then obviously you put that off or you can't afford it, whatever it might be, and it never happens. In fact, they've established pretty comprehensively that 5 minutes in any kind of greenery in the course of your day has a measurable beneficial effect on mental health. Even looking at a green rectangle in one study, as opposed to rectangles of other colors. So, you know, I changed my screensaver on my wallpaper on my laptop pretty quickly after I encountered that to a green scene. I'm not saying it makes up for not getting to the countryside as often as I'd like, but it may make a difference. And then, you know, we hear this all the time, but many kinds of mindfulness meditation, breath following, sitting down, closing your eyes, placing the attention on the breath, bringing it back when your attention wanders. You can't open a magazine or go to a bookstore these days without being told that, but there's a reason, you know, which is that it really, really works and has an effect that lasts through the rest of the day.
Now, Oliver, when I'm best at being unproductive, there's often a screen involved. I'm playing a computer game, watching TV, looking at YouTube videos, whatever. It seems to me that I don't come up with brilliant creative solutions when I'm doing those things. Is that counterproductive?
I'm not aware of really specific research into the screen and creativity. I think that one thing that there is some research into, and it certainly chimes with my personal experience, is that there is a problem in the fact that we use these same devices for everything. You know, so you're at work. If you're like me, you work on a laptop, you take that same laptop back home with you at the end of the day. You might be watching streaming movies on the laptop and emailing friends, but also then, you know, doing work and paying bills. And I think that there's a real benefit in it, even if you have to keep using screens. You know, if you can make them different screens. I have an e-reader that does not connect to the internet, and that is a much more relaxing experience, even though it's still a screen. I think that anything that sort of adds variety to the ways in which we are placing our attention and engaging it is going to sort of till the soil a bit and get creativity moving a bit.
We're talking to Oliver Berkman about the value of doing nothing. He says we're not giving our brains enough downtime and that we need to work some inactivity into our lives.
And you can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you take the time to do nothing? Or is there always some kind of distraction at hand, maybe a screen? Do you feel like you have to make the most of your time? Do you feel that pressure? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We continue our conversation now with Oliver Berkman about his recent piece in The Guardian, 5 Reasons We Should All Learn to Do Nothing. He says we're too busy, trying too hard to make the most of our time, and we're not giving our brains enough rest and relaxation.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your version of doing nothing? When you're overwhelmed with work, you've been staring at the screen or whatever the job is for too long, what do you do to get away, collect yourself, and maybe find that creative inspiration to solve a problem? Or do you have a hard time doing that when you're doing nothing or, you know, some non-productive activity? Do you feel guilty? Are the things you need to do lurking, wondering where you are, why you're not getting them done right now? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Oliver, you mentioned in the piece we're talking about, maybe we need to schedule this time off, this doing nothing time.
Right. I mean, I think that this is a really big challenge because even, first of all, I want to be clear. I understand that there are people working, you know, 2 jobs every hour they've got. It's not going to seem like they have any opportunity to do nothing. But even for the rest of us who actually theoretically have the time, it's incredibly hard to bring yourself to do it. And when you sit down and try to do nothing, it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel, it feels like, as you say, like you feel guilty or it just feels, you know, unrelaxing and annoying. And one trick that I think works really well is to try and decide, you know, where is this 30 minutes or hour in the day going to be when you're going to aim to try to just put your attention off the screens and off work and just sort of look around you and pay attention to your environment or meditate or whatever it is. Firstly, because, you know, as with everything, if you schedule in advance, there seems to be a much greater chance that it will actually happen. And secondly, because you can sort of see that it's there and you can avoid just agreeing to a whole lot of other things that are going to impinge on that time. I'm not sure you're going to have much luck if you try to tell a friend that you can't, you know, meet them for a drink because you're scheduled to do nothing. It's not very socially acceptable, but I think it maybe ought to be.
Well, here's a comment from Joe on Facebook. He says he sees this as very important. I play in about 5 different music groups in Madison. Most of them practice on weeknights, but I always try to give myself a couple nights off on my own for mental health and laundry and chores. I'm not doing nothing, but I am on autopilot, relatively low stress. So maybe there are degrees of doing nothing.
Right, absolutely. And I can imagine that for a musician, you know, playing music is certainly not doing nothing, but it attains some of the similar kind of losing yourself, not feeling like you're sort of grinding out work. And then, sure, I mean, there's absolutely, you know, we all have to do chores. And if you can achieve a kind of serenity in your mental attitude to doing them, then I think that counts too. It's all really about variation in the kinds of things you're doing with your attention, rather than sort of any one specific thing being the answer. It's just a question of relaxing some of this kind of really intense focus that comes to characterize our days at the moment.
You know, it's kind of funny because playing music is one of my versions of doing nothing. I play music, but I'm rarely compensated for it, so it doesn't feel like productive activity. So it is,
right.
That is my break. That is kind of a refreshing change from anything that feels worky.
Right. And it's you know, it's such a problem with this idea in the culture, which can have its benefits of like how you should try if you possibly can to turn your passion into your job so that your job is your passion. And actually, there's always a little bit of me saying, well, hang on, you know, I sing in a community chorus here, and, you know, I could not make a cent from my singing in a professional sense, I assure you. But actually, that's kind of why it's so great when the weekly rehearsal comes around. And though I do love writing, you know, I also have to do it to make a living, and that takes away something. So it's again, you know, I think it's great to have something in your life that you really are not compensated for and do just for the love of it. Yeah.
Do you think doing nothing can be kind of a hard sell because there might be some sort of biological basis for it? And thinking back a long time, many, many years, you hold still, you do nothing, you get eaten by a lion.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, we just go through life with these kind of predispositions that are suited to hundreds of thousands of years ago, you know, and it stresses us out in all sorts of different ways. So that's the same reason that, you know, hearing about terrible things happening on the news miles away can cause us to be stressed as if they were actually posing a direct threat to us. And I think, yeah, we're sort of we're made to be alert. But actually, you know, there are actually a lot of situations in modern life that you can put yourself into where you don't need to be completely alert. You don't need to, you know, the fact that something, a noise goes off in your environment just means that you've got too many notifications set on your phone. Not that there's actually a danger that you need to pay attention to. So it's a question of sort of managing the environment to allow it sometimes, I think.
Now, Oliver, you've written about happiness in the past, and I think you were on our morning talk show some years back talking about your book. Is this one of the pieces of the happiness puzzle, this taking time away from being productive?
I think it is. You know, I think that where it fits in, what I tried to do in the book was to talk about how, you know, positive thinking and the whole approach that says you've got to really be optimistic whenever you, as much as you can really backfire. It's actually very stressful to try to only think positive thoughts, but actually there's a lot to be said for finding a way to accommodate feelings of failure or insecurity or uncertainty rather than trying to stamp them out. And I think this is a little bit the same. You know, it's all about being able to think that actually sometimes the counterintuitive truth applies. It isn't that the way to be happy is to think happy thoughts as much as you can. It isn't that the way to be productive and accomplished is to, you know, tick off as many items on your to-do list as relentlessly as you can for as many hours of the day. It's actually, you know, being able to draw back from that and tolerate that kind of uneasy feeling of, I think I should be doing something, but I'm actually gonna not do anything for a little while. I think it's all part of this. This thing that I call slightly in jest, you know, the negative path to happiness. Sounds like you wouldn't get there, but I think it's a much more effective route in the end.
I've always been jealous of cultures that honor the siesta tradition, Mexico, Spain. Are there some cultures that maybe are better at making time for breaks like these?
I think that's true. I think, you know, it's dying out, I fear, as a particular way of working and a particular form of economic life dominates the world. But one that particularly appeals to me is the tradition in Swedish workplaces that they call the fika, which is a coffee break. It's only a coffee break, and, you know what they are, but it tends to be a fairly rigid time. So, you know, if it's at 3 p.m. in your workplace, it's at 3 p.m. in your workplace. You don't get to just sort of take it at other times. Everyone gathers in the same place. Everyone can see there that, you know, the top boss is having some downtime as well as everyone more junior. And that sort of seems to contribute to a feeling that, you know, this is okay, that it's fine to take a little bit of time to talk about things that have maybe not worked, to sort of, it's a question of setting an example. That seems to be a really nice thing. I mean, coffee breaks in some ways are exactly opposite to siestas, aren't they? Because you're using the opportunity to give yourself a caffeine so you can make it through the rest of the day. But I think that you know, it speaks to the same idea of rhythm and changes and respecting the fact that we're cyclical.
Well, I wonder how this would play in an American workplace, because I think there'd be the sense that, oh, whoever shows up at this, I forgot what the name, this equivalent of this break, this siesta, doesn't have enough work to do. If they were really working hard, they'd blow through this puppy and, like, stay at their desk and get more done. And I think right. That applies really in a lot of our work environments here.
I think it does, and I think it shouldn't. You know, you do read a little bit now about certain pioneering firms in Silicon Valley and elsewhere who are experimenting with, you know, saying that you can't work after lunchtime on a Friday, like you have to go home. That the we're no longer letting you work, and that the results seem to really back it up. I think we have this mental model that comes from the Industrial Revolution and a few other things that basically humans are like machines. If you want to get more out of a machine, you run it for a few more hours, and it's just not actually the way that it works. So I think one of the biggest things that will be great if we could come to understand is that this is not about self-indulgence. This is not about, you know, turning into Europeans with all the certain prejudices that Americans may harbor, not always wrongly about Europeans. It's actually just a really good idea for the bottom line in almost any work, but especially kind of knowledge work that involves people, you know, using their brains. It's just a really good idea all around.
Right, and Oliver, as we wrap up, if there is this data piling up that we are more productive when we do take some breaks, when we do a little bit of nothing, is the tide turning on this?
I think you're seeing changes. I think you're seeing an increasing number of people choosing forms of work where they can that allows them to take this time. You know, the huge increase in home working is at least partly about cutting out long commutes as a sort of something that you can do something else with that time. There are all sorts of experiments going on in Germany and Scandinavia with certain kinds of limitations on the workday. And it's not usually out of some idea that people deserve more leisure time. It's out of an understanding that actually it might help organizations function more effectively and more profitably as well.
Oliver, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That's Oliver Berkman. He's a Guardian columnist. He's the author of The Antidote, Happiness for People Who Can't Stand Positive Thinking. You can check out his piece that we've been talking about. It's on doing nothing. We've got a link to that over at the Central Time Facebook page, and you can share the ways you do nothing.